CliffCentral.com.
See, I was asking Fred.
Right, so I won't lie, that took me back. That took me back to my high school days when I went to an all-girls high school, which was just the worst time of my life. I don't know why people do that. Can you just imagine being a teenage girl in a hostile environment and just being obsessed and in love with the guys from Backstreet
Boys? A hostile or hostile environment?
Hostile environment. I mean, I was in boarding school.
Yeah, but come on. Your parents send you to all-girls school, so you don't get pregnant, my valley.
Oh, gosh.
Who was your favorite?
My favorite what?
Backstreet Boy.
Let me see if I can remember them now. Joey.
It was Nick.
At
AJ.
Oh God.
Is it horrible that I remember them? Never.
I don't know that I had a favorite. I think I was just obsessed with the whole band. But yeah, there you go. Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet. Back.
Yes,
yeah, you are a constant education on pop culture for me. I didn't think that if I ask you for songs, you would give me Backstreet Boys.
That's a good list.
Journey, Don't Stop Believing.
Come on, the ultimate karaoke song.
And Elvis, A Little More Conversation. This is...
Hey, I like that song. We have to play that song
that
at
is
the end
my,
of the show.
That is actually my alarm song.
A Little Less Conversation.
But see, like, you know, I expected at least one Beyonce, and you were entitled to a Beyonce song.
I decided, let me not, like... lose half of the listenership.
You know, the best part of the Backstreet Boys was the fact that Nick had a brother, Aaron, and Aaron Carter went on to make his own music, and his songs were, when I was a child, his songs were the coolest thing ever.
No, but he is like a druggie now.
Yeah, but back in the day, back in the day.
let's be nice about him. He's a lost cause now. He supports Trump's. He supports Trump. He goes on Twitter with his rants. Yeah, life hasn't been good to him, hey?
Oh. All right, so well, I think we'll actually let you cross over into tomorrow with the rest of your songs.
Yeah.
Because I got them late. So that's a real win. Mubs, we've got the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra interview with Gareth coming up sort of around in about 10, 15 minutes' time. What we do need to get into is that there's been a bit of a backlash or feedback around Michael's conspiracy theory.
Well, you know, we anticipate these kinds of responses, so let's hear it.
Right, so Joe Schultz-Lenert says, "Hi, Mike. I love listening to your conspiracy theories. Check this out. Neil Armstrong, the first human to step on the moon, A spelt backwards is...
Armstrong backwards.
Neil
Neil spelt backwards.
Neil spelt back. Neil A. Sorry.
Is
alien.
Yes, I'll just get into it. I was looking for something cryptic there. So Neil A. spelt backwards is alien.
Okay.
Coincidence much? Or could that possibly be because he's a reptilian?
But you guys, who calls him Neil A.?
Well, Joe does.
It's like BFF level.
In the interest of this theory, Joe reckons that Neil Armstrong is Neil A to all his mates.
Okay, so he's an alien, basically.
Yeah.
Was an alien.
Okay. Do you know, we
Michael, I was hoping for more.
We are legit days, maybe weeks away from finding out if aliens exist. Because remember Hillary Clinton put pressure on Obama to reveal if aliens exist, because she said she would reveal and uncover all the secrets and stuff. So before Obama leaves the office, he's going to reveal everything he knows about the aliens and Area 51, and straight after Obama reveals, David Cameron's going to reveal everything he knows. So this could change the way this Earth works today. We can find out that we have fellow brethren on another planet, and that would change every single move we make from there on.
Every single move.
I mean, Ben, you won't be phoning your brother. You'll be trying to phone your extended family who are aliens on another planet.
Sure.
I don't know. No.
Well, I... Michael, let's wait for Obama to reveal this one.
I am very excited.
Because, like, I mean, I found this story on quite a few news sites. Obama on the brink of revealing truth about UFOs. Now, is this because he could be the first president to do this, therefore he's taking the chance? You know, is there new information? Has he just lost the plot?
Yeah, but let's also not forget that the purpose of headlines is to hype things up. I mean, this reads like a hyped up headline to me, to possibly a story that's a non-story or that's not as exciting as we're making it out to be in our heads. It's maybe just a case of, I mean, what's he going to say when he reveals what they are, aliens or they're not, is what most people are anticipating, right?
Well,
I think maybe he's just going to let us in on all the different studies and work that the U.S. government has conducted on trying to prove or disprove that aliens exist.
Well, there's some guy called Stephen Bassett, right? Now, he's been lobbying for government for like 20 years, saying, we must know about the UFOs, we must know. So basically, he said, this will be a reality this year. Across the front page of newspapers across the world, ET is real. The most significant news story that's ever been broken, he reckons. We're going to get disclosure this year. I'm not sure who will win the election, but I think Obama will be the disclosure president. So they even got a name to it. He'll be known as the disclosure president. He'll be looking at a Nobel Prize for making the announcement.
What?
But it depends. Like, if they just got a spaceship, right? So what?
So what?
If they've got, I don't know, like, you can go and visit the aliens, and they've been chatting to aliens, the aliens have already got stuff on the go, then, yeah, sure, Nobel
like
Prize.
Like, FaceTiming and the aliens.
I keep mentioning that. Obama's like, look, it's been real. But Michelle and I and the kids, we're going to go live on planet Uzagrogkrang.
Zoltan.
And you can come visit us, provided you vote for Hillary. And everyone's going to go, okay, fair enough. And then you go there, and he's created a parallel universe where everyone looks like Hillary. That would be the biggest nightmare of all nightmares.
Here's the silver lining. If Trump does win the elections in America, I would really push for alien discovery, because if aliens come to Earth and they need to take the leader, who will they take? They'll take Trump. So go away. Go ahead and kidnap Trump. He's all yours. That's fine. I think that actually might work out for the best.
Well, maybe that's exactly what he wants to do. He wants to play this alien card, okay? Ooh. And then use this leverage saying, look, the aliens have told me that if you vote for Trump, they're going to take over the planet. And that's what he's actually going to use. I mean, look, it's this Conspiracy Theory Wednesday, which has now become Thursday, too.
Yeah, but you see, the other problem here is that as soon as we start talking about aliens, what we picture in our minds is what Hollywood has created. What if these aliens are no more interesting looking than some,
living amongst us,
than some microscopic organism, and that's the alien form?
Imagine Obama's about to give his speech on the aliens, and all he says is, they're among us, and then he drops dead.
But what?
That's let a bit of let a that twist. Sink in.
No, I'm not going to let that sink in. So, Obama, when is he making this big announcement?
I think just before he leaves office, so probably the week before or something like that.
And then doesn't David Cameron also have some kind of...
Yeah, David's going to go straight after him, they say.
So it's been planned that these two are going to make some or other type of big announcement about aliens.
According to this guy that Ben just mentioned, that's how it's going to roll out.
Okay.
I don't mean to rain on any parade, but who, like, how credible is this guy? Where does he get his information from?
Well, we just have no way of knowing, Sia. We just have no way of saying. Okay. He might as well go onto Twitter and make announcements there.
Well, look, let's get back to the big stories of the day. Domino's Pizza apologized for a wrinkled testicle found on a pizza.
No.
I heard the story and I think it's stupid.
I don't understand what is going on here.
Well,
human?
She is right. It's completely stupid. Okay. Somebody bought a pizza from Domino's, right?
Okay.
Proceeded to take out his left nut, and he put his left nut on the pizza. He then tweeted Domino's UK and says, why is there an uncooked meatball on my pepperoni passion? I'm fuming. So there's this picture. It's plain to see, right? He just placed his nuts on the corner of the pizza.
All right.
So Domino's Pizza UK replies, sorry about that. Have you told the store about this?
Oh, no. But why did they play into that?
They played into it completely. So this guy, he was clearly pulling the piss. I mean, there's people have been retweeting this thing. Like, it's almost like 30,000 retweets. But he just...
No.
Just placed his left nut on the pizza.
This is a guy who had a lot of time on his hands. Just wanted attention because he's now tweeting, I can't believe that my left testicle is more famous than me. Yeah. Like, What do you want in life? Were you so bored and clearly not hungry to the point where you want a famous testicle?
Yeah, but we see this kind of stuff all the time. So, yeah, people are saying they find Jesus in their lattes. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, my gosh, I found a plaster in my Burger King. I want millions.
Yeah, I found a condom in my salad.
I found a condom in my nuggets.
But when your pizza gets delivered and you look at it and you go, you'd look damn good with my balls on you. Like, what?
See, but this is why the aliens aren't actually coming here, because intelligent life is now just drying up. This guy has used social media for what he thinks this is what social media is for, right? Placing his nut in a pizza. Come on. It's kind of genius, though. You got
So he didn't actually cut off his nut. He just placed it on.
I mean, Michael, that's quite a dedication to
it. The length you'd go for a retweet
to cut off one of your testicles. But it is pretty funny. And the pizza's called the Pepperoni Passion.
Oh, yeah. But you see, I don't know.
Then we absolutely judge Kim Kardashian here. Okay, can I quickly just talk about this? And I want this to be a story that stands up for everything that I believe in.
And so it's an Oprah story?
No, it actually is.
Okay.
You guys always judge me for saying that I'm too squeamish and I have anxiety over the weirdest things. And why does my mind always race to, like, the extreme opposite?
So, yeah, I think we're entitled to all of the above there, but carry on.
You're entitled to all of that, but listen to this. So there was a guy in America, his name is Brad Sapp, and he was walking around his office, you know, and it clearly works at like a community little center, so it was just him and his wife, and he kept on hearing someone whisper, "Get out of here." And he was telling his wife, and his wife wasn't believing him, and he was walking around telling people like, "Yo, I'm hearing this voice, there's someone who's whispering, get out of here," and it's kind of freaky. What actually happens? He leaves his wife alone, and a couple of hours later, his wife finds someone in the chimney. So maybe it wasn't a ghost, but it was still kind of freaky enough.
In
the
chimney.
In the chimney.
What the hell was he doing in their chimney?
Here we go. The story gets weirder. The dude, well, the wife's name is Carrie. She finds 29-year-old Jordan Kajewski, who is in their chimney naked. I can't even say only in America, because it's just a human race going down.
That sounds to me like the ending of a wild boys' night out. It kind of reminds me of that that movie with Bradley Cooper and how they got hangover. So drunk. Hangover, yes. It sounds to me like a hangover plot.
Possibly, because as he was now naked, the wife is now like, "Dude, what are you doing in my chimney?" He goes, "I'm sorry, I fell in here while I was playing hide and seek." How are you 29 years old playing hide and seek? Somehow you decide to take your clothes off as well and then get stuck in the chimney. Well, he's now been arrested for trespassing charges, and the police were called, of course. So it's still unclear as to why he was exactly naked, and was he maybe trying to break in or just playing hide and seek? But all I'm saying is, next time you guys think I'm slightly crazy or just going on a bit of a cuckoo rant, remember the story.
A cuckoo rant.
Thank you.
What does one actually do when one finds a naked man in their chimney? Like, what do you say?
You think if you have a girlfriend or a wife, and then you think, why is there a naked man in my chimney? Is there any relation?
It's such a weird story, and it's such a weird situation. Like, what do you even do? Yeah.
Well, if you want more of that story in length, it's actually on our unused section on the cliffcentral.com website, where every day there's all kinds of funny stories like that. And it's not just Sia who finds this stuff. It's actually in the world. But this whole man in the chimney thing, I mean, who started it? Santa Claus.
Santa Claus, exactly.
Why was I thinking Michael Jackson? No, because he did Man in the Mirror. Sorry.
Kind of a Christmas did you have growing up, yeah?
Man in the Mirror.
Weird reference. Apologies.
Move on. So we've got a couple other things that will come to at the end of the show. We need to get into this interview that Gareth had with the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra. And as Michael said, it will blow your mind because of all the instruments and all the various things that they played. But before we get into that, we need to get into another one of Sia's songs. Okay, so
let's do the Elvis one, please.
Sia has crafted a beautiful playlist today, which has blown my mind a little bit. So we can get into that. And then on the back of this, the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra with the Gareth Cliff.
CliffCentral.com.
There's a great show coming up called A Night with the Stars. It's the Joburg Youth Orchestra, and we've spoken to people involved with the Joburg Youth Orchestra before, but I think that this is really one of the coolest things that anyone who is looking for some kind of, whether it's a skill that they want to turn into, you know, a career one day, whether it's someone who's just got a hobby, whether it's just someone who's talented playing an instrument, it's just the most awesome thing to be a part of an orchestra, because you suddenly realize that saying that the whole and the sum of the parts, you know, that it's all absolutely true. If you could play a certain instrument really well, it kind of gives you confidence to do all kinds of other things. And if you are good at it, you can do it just about anywhere and impress anyone. So if you're looking for a date or you're trying to find, a way to make some money, an instrument and the ability to play it masterfully is just the most incredible. I'm very jealous of people who can play instruments. So we're speaking to Eddie Clayton, and Eddie's got an incredible CV as well. I mean, we've discussed some of the stuff that you've done before, Eddie, but it's really good to have you here again.
Thank you so much, Gareth. Wonderful to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, so tell me about A Night with the Stars for starters. Let's begin with that. You're conducting the orchestra.
That's correct, yeah. This is our fourth year of A Night with the Stars, and we're trying to sort of create a household name in the same vein as Starlight Classics and that type of thing.
Right.
But just from a youth point of view. What is special about this year is we are collaborating with a company called Born to Perform, mm-hmm. who's a similar organization to what we do, but they focus more on singing, dancing, acting. We had our first rehearsal with some of the youngsters from Born to Perform last night, and it was just indescribable, unbelievable, the energy and the vibe, and, you know, mixing up the two groups. And
how much rehearsing do you guys have to do?
Look, we rehearse on a weekly basis, 2 hours once a week, and then obviously as we get closer to the show, we intensify those rehearsals. So we'll have, we'll look at about three-hour sessions, and then going in a final dress, etc. So you obviously the hours intensify and all of that as we get closer.
You've brought with you Clinton Mekwe and Stephen Maycock. Stephen plays the clarinet and Clinton plays the trumpet. And you guys obviously have to practice on your own. So you come to the practice for 2 hours once a week, but you are practicing alone, or I suppose with other people who will complain that they can still hear you.
That's the thing. We hope they practice.
How often do you practice, Clinton?
Oh, I'm at school, so if I'm free, I'll say maybe 30 minutes a day.
30 minutes a day? That's a discipline. You know, you've got to do it, I suppose. And then there are probably those days where you miss a practice, and then you probably feel guilty, right?
Yeah, based on schoolwork.
And how about you?
I try, for the orchestra, you know, you have to try and be prepared to play the pieces, otherwise you kind of go to the rehearsals and it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So I try to, you know, get all
and you let down the whole orchestra.
Yeah. And then, you get started at by 80 for practicing. But no, I try to just get all my pieces done as soon as I get them. So you just play through everything, you know, try and get the gist of it. But yeah, usually about half an hour to an hour as well, because varsity gets a bit much.
Well, listen, we'll talk to you guys in a moment and hear what you can do with that clarinet and that trumpet. But I think let's go back to Eddie for a second. When you put an orchestra together, do you have a lot of choices here? Are there a lot of people who can play and have learnt to play the instrument? Or are you in a situation where I get very sad when I hear that there aren't enough people who could play a certain instrument and you really don't have options? Do we have a huge variety of talented musicians in this country?
Yes and no, Gareth. We do. It comes in seasons. This year I've got a particularly strong orchestra. I don't know how it works, but obviously something in the air at a certain year just brings in exceptional talent, and then you have a dip. You know, it's kind of the nature of the beast of this whole thing. What we go through, as I explained the last time, was we go through an audition process and we have applications. This year we had amazing. I think we made over 200 applications, of which we could probably accept 30. So we do not send them away, but we recommend them into some of the smaller groups and the younger groups. We've got intermediate groups,
right,
and junior groups. So we kind of we have a filtering system.
Are you one of those people who believes you can teach a musician to be better, or are you one of those people who believes that if there isn't that initial burst of talent, there's never going to be? You can never, you know, if you took someone who can't hear a note and you try to get them to play an instrument, it's pretty much near impossible.
It's a tough question. In my experience over the years, you get kids that are obviously exceptional. The two guys sitting here are two exceptional musicians. You do get the case where there is just no hope, and but you can, it can be taught. You can get up to a certain level. I know of guys that
you
are
can be competent, but you're never going to have that flair,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, that flash. No, for sure. So it's a fine line.
How did it happen for you?
Look, I took to it like a fish to water. I started playing when I was 4 years old.
What did you start with?
Recorder and piano. I started piano at four, and drums and percussion. Both my parents were musicians. My grandfather was a musician.
Yeah, you come from a long line of these. Apparently, your great grandfather was Horace Barton.
Yeah,
right.
No one's ever heard of him, but he's actually in the encyclopedia.
No,
he was a reasonably famous composer at one stage. So it's kind of it has been in my genes, and I've been very blessed. I've never found music to be a burden. It's always, for me, it's been something that I've wanted to do. And I've done sport and I've done everything. Mm. But music has always kind of just gone through with me. So it's never been an effort for me, music. Obviously the effort of working, but I've always enjoyed it.
Well, you even managed to find a way to get music into your life at a time where most young men, this is a while ago in South Africa when there's conscription and everything else, we all had to go to the army. But you managed to bring music even into that.
Well, you talk about conscription. I was the second last intake of conscriptions. Yeah. So I did 14 years in the military bands, which was actually sort of my big springboard for the professional scene that I'm on now.
But that's an incredible environment and very rarefied, and there's so little of it these days.
Well, you'd be surprised. There's still, I think, if I get my numbers right, about 22 military bands in the country as
really?
We speak. Yeah,
that's extraordinary.
So the South African Police Services, they've got 12, and I know the Defence Force have also got bands throughout, Air Force band, medics band, you name it.
And it's quite a place to learn.
It's an interesting environment. It's the left brain with the right brain, and the
because you're marching when you're playing.
Marching up and down, absolutely. A lot of these youngsters that leave our orchestra, actually, we. It's a great job for a young musician to go in with a full salary and a housing subsidy. It's
sure.
a fantastic job.
I mean, if music is your thing,
exactly.
you need
yeah.
to find a way to make it pay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I had a great career. I mean, I had 14 years and I was in France, Paris, Korea. We toured all over the world. So we had a good run.
What did you play in the military band?
I was a French horn player initially. And then I was promoted up the ranks and I became senior director of music in my last 6 years in the service. So, yeah.
That's cool. Then you're playing for presidents and
literally. Yeah, yeah I played for four presidents, four South African presidents in my career. Yeah.
Who were they?
Evia. We did Evia de Klerk, and then Madiba, which was just incredible. Thabo Mbeki, and I played for Jacob Zuma as well.
Unbelievable, so, huh?
And interesting, the dynamics of the different presidents. Just silly things like parade is at 9. Evia was always early. Madiba was early, and he'd come and greet the band. Thabo Mbeki was always late. And Zuma was kind of inconsistent. You could never kind of – it was an interesting dynamic.
Now, I'm also quite curious about how these bands work. I mean, do you guys live in – you're obviously in the military. So, I mean, while you were in there, you would live on a military base.
Depending, no.
In a dormitory.
You did that as well. Look, in my day, when we were still conscription guys, we were forced to stay in dormitories.
Yeah.
A mate of mine and I, we lived illegally out in a flat in Sunnyside. We couldn't take the dormitory.
Oh, really?
And we'd go in on a Wednesday morning for inspection. So most of the guys stay at home, and then they commute in and out for their work, yeah.
And being with the SANDF, it gave you an opportunity to explore different things in music and to have, you know, you had a salary, you had a place to stay.
Exactly.
It was an exciting thing, but at the same time, it gave you a security that allowed you to branch out.
Yeah, which is also potentially a dangerous thing, you know, if you get too comfortable in any kind of organization. And I find that a lot, and I mustn't talk out of the bedroom, but a lot of the guys get into a very big comfort zone there, and they kind of sit, and then they sit for the rest of their lives there and don't progress.
But let's also be fair that once you step out of that kind of safety and security, you're moving into a world where you have to be commercially viable, and that's almost much more difficult in every way.
Very tough.
Right?
Yeah, very tough. It's what I did. I've been out for 10 years now, and it's been a great journey, but a tough journey. It's not an easy industry, the music business.
Yeah.
It's a very tough industry.
I mean, who is making money in music at the moment?
Yeah.
it's very difficult. Yeah, there used to be a time where people would buy music, which they're clearly not doing anymore.
Yeah, well, Kurt Darren's making music, and you, Anita, you know, the Afrikaans musicians are making huge money. They are making massive money.
No, look, there are
money,
people, but it's nowhere near what it used to be.
No, negative. No, as I say, the Afrikaans scene is huge, amazingly, in this country.
But classical music?
Classical music is a dying art form. No, that's incorrect. It's
God, that was just about the most sad bad thing I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. I was just about to cry.
It's unfortunately, it has very that niche. Stigma of the niche, yeah, and it's very exclusive. Well, it's supposedly exclusive, which it actually isn't. We're trying to, with the Joburg Youth Orchestra, we're trying to bridge that gap. You'll see the program that we're putting on for this Night with the Stars. We're playing pieces from, okay, first of all, The Planets by Gustav Holst. Then we're playing a piece by Led Zeppelin, Kashmir. So we really kind of, we're just breaking bridges down. And, yeah, it's you know, it's the beauty of music is it breaks borders and it brings people together inadvertently. They don't even realize it. It creates a phenomenal dynamic and through music. And I just find that, yeah, what the orchestra company does as a company is just exquisite. I wish the government could come and spend a month with us and see how we do things there. Because I'm telling
you some funding. That would be
That would be wonderful as well, but yes.
Eddie, how does it work when you're conducting an orchestra? What are you actually looking at? What are you paying attention to?
Look, obviously, first and foremost is to get, in our case, 60 musicians on the same page, literally musically. So I'm basically in the initial rehearsals, let's take a brand new piece of music. I basically become a metronome and I beat through the phrases and I stop where I hear mistakes. It's really tough, obviously, to get 60 players to play together. So those initial rehearsals are really just to note bash through and get as much information into the kids so they get a feel for the music.
Mm-hmm.
And as we progress on with the rehearsals, then we start looking at musical aspects, that putting in dynamics, louds and softs and tempo changes and making music. You know, it's one thing to play a bunch of notes on a page, but to actually create beautiful music as the composers intended them. That's the challenge, and that's the beauty of what I do. I absolutely love what I do.
How much interpretation is there in a score?
There's a fair amount. It's a very good question, that, because obviously the conductor has got the composer's had a very specific idea of what he wants.
Because they stipulate tempo. Exactly. They stipulate when each instrument comes in. Yeah. They stipulate which note is played at what time.
Absolutely.
And all of that stuff is written into the score, but it can't prescribe everything.
Absolutely. You're never going to get two identical performances of a piece of music, even by the same orchestra. That's the beauty, the live factor of it.
Mm.
Yeah, obviously you stick to the score as closely as possible, and you get your diva conductors that kind of make it their own.
I've heard. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I heard a while ago somebody told me that if you took some of the old classics, the you know Bach's, Beethoven's, and Mozart's, and you played them at the tempos that they prescribed them to be played at, we'd almost not be able to recognize them.
It's an interesting...
Because it's been changed so much, and people have kind of adapted things, and there's been a lot of... Like anything, it gets lost in translation sometimes.
Yeah.
And you actually end up occasionally improving it.
Absolutely. You know, bearing in mind, if you think back in those days with Mozart, I mean, what, the 1600s, 1700s, instruments weren't the quality that we have now.
I mean, it's kind of meant to be but it's not played like that now.
Not played like that. It's not practical. There was, if I may digress slightly, we did a performance of the Magic Flute a couple of years ago, and there was a young British conductor that came across and conducted the orchestra, and he took the overture, the famous Marriage of Figaro overture. He took it at the speed of white light. And some silly second violinist in the orchestra put a hand up and said, why are we doing this so fast? And he digressed. He told a story. He's a Mozart fundi. And there was evidence of the first performances of the Magic Flute where the show started at 7. And Mozart, after every show, would walk home to his flat, which was 2 blocks from the theater, and immediately write a letter to his mother with a date and a time. So he'd arrive at, let's say, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And based on those stats... They kind of did some mathematical sums as
and
to how
that
fast
it had to
Mozart
be quick.
Exactly,
huh.
Which was just interesting. So whether he intended it or he was just in a hurry to get home, yeah.
And you were saying instruments used to be quite a lot more rudimentary.
Obviously, yeah. You'd get what we called period instruments in those days. So for example, a French horn didn't have valves; they were all period instruments. They guys had to change crooks and change mouthpieces. So yeah, the instrument technology has changed over the years. Obviously, the quality has improved. I would be fascinated to hear. I mean, it's obviously impossible, but to hear a 1600 orchestra playing, you know,
is it impossible? Can't they re-engineer those things?
I don't
reverse
know.
Engineer them?
I'm sure they can. I'm sure there must be a way, but it would be fascinating to see.
Come on, put that together.
I'm on it.
Yeah, we could do a TV series on that.
Fantastic. I'll do
People
it.
People would be fascinated.
Yeah.
When it comes to modern instruments, obviously you say they're a lot more precise and a lot more easy to use. And
yes.
Yep. A lot simpler, but they're also kind of expensive. Ooh. I mean, you know, if you're buying brass instruments like your trumpet, Clinton, I mean, that must be expensive, right?
It's quite expensive.
what does a trumpet cost these days in the shops?
Look, you can go anything. Obviously, you get ranges. Like in anything, you get an entry-level range. So you can anything from 3,000 up to probably 50, 60,000 rand, probably more.
And what are the parts that you have to keep on buying, the reeds and that kind of thing?
No, the trumpet uses a mouthpiece. So
do you have to replace that every now and then?
No. The only thing that you just keep buying is valve oil. That's all.
Valve oil.
Yeah,
and do you have to polish it up and keep it looking a certain way?
Yeah, you have to keep it clean. In order, if you want a nice tone and stuff, it has to be clean.
Do you would you keep it in a safe place? Where do you keep your trumpet? No, sure, but I mean, where do you hide your trumpet?
When I get home, I always put it on top of my wardrobe.
Okay.
Because my small brother, hey, it's a problem, that guy.
And he'll try and play it, right?
Yeah.
And how about a clarinet? I mean, what do you have to initial capital outlay there, and what do you have to keep buying?
Also, ranges with like most instruments from like, you know, entry level clarinet, probably about 4,000, 3,000. Mm-hmm. Then you get some professional ones going to 60, 70,000. But with the clarinet as well, because there's a lot of different parts to it. So you'll find many professionals will buy different mouthpieces because it has a different sound and that. And any mouthpiece will go for 2,000, 3,000 rand sometimes. And that's just one out of like six parts of it. So it's quite a lot to get
a very
good clarinet going.
It's a finicky instrument, the clarinet. Yeah.
What made you decide to play the trumpet, Clinton? What was that? What was it about the trumpet? Was it like Humasigela? Was it a certain song? Was it Louis Armstrong? I mean, who is the person who kind of got you thinking, this is the instrument for me?
It's Humasigela.
Yeah.
Because I was a cello player before. Then I started hearing the trumpet, because Humasigela was like an ambassador at our school.
Uh-huh.
And then he came in. Once he came in, he started playing the trumpet. Then I was like, no more cello trumpet now.
So from strings to brass?
Yes.
Huh. Is that a transition you often see?
No, very seldom.
Oh. And you say he's very good on the trumpet. We'll hear it just now, right?
We hold thumbs for it. Yeah. But no, he's my principal trumpet at the orchestra at the moment. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He gets a lot of flack from me. We call it the hot seat. The first trumpet is the hot seat.
Did you ever get to tell Brahu that you were inspired by him?
I've once met up with him at a show that he had in the Civic Center in Bramfontein. Then I met up, then I played with him, jammed with him, then he taught me some fundamentals and stuff. So it was
awesome.
A great honor.
There's something about musicians, like you guys do not mind spending a huge amount of time with each other, and you don't mind teaching each other things, and there's a special camaraderie. When it falls outside of that, a lot of musicians actually don't want to talk about music with non-musicians, right?
Yes.
Because we frustrate you. It's almost like you're talking to an idiot. Be honest.
I am.
Very nice. And how about you, Stephen? I mean, what's the inspiration? A clarinet also. I mean, you could have, you know, you could have played a lot of wind instruments, I suppose.
To be honest, I actually always wanted to play the saxophone. But then when I started music, I was too small to hold a saxophone. So they gave me a clarinet instead. And then after two or three years or so, I was like, hey, I kind of like this instrument, so might as well just keep it here. And then went from there.
What's the strangest of these instruments to work with as a conductor? I mean, you don't have to be able to play all of them.
Yeah.
But which one is the most difficult to integrate into the whole?
Look, with the oboe, as I would say, the oboe is just, it's a ridiculous instrument. It's got a tiny little double reed on the front. Yeah. It sounds like a duck, and it's just an exceptionally difficult instrument. So, especially for youngsters to play the oboe, it's one of those awkward instruments. Obviously, and it's one of the most beautiful. You can't, we don't have an oboe at the moment. There's a great shortage of oboe players for obvious reasons.
Sure.
The instruments are difficult. You know, if there's a 2-degree change in temperature, the thing goes out, and it's this and that, and it's very finicky. Very finicky. It's a tricky, tricky little instrument, yeah.
Have you ever tried to play one?
I have. I've never made a note out of it, though.
Really? It's that difficult?
Why is it so hard?
I don't
know. Because I play clarinet, though, so your mouth position, if you call it that, is very different in over kind of thing. And then to produce a sound, you get a squeak at the most. But
that's pretty cool. How did you get into... Because for a lot of people, playing any instrument, did you just discover you had a talent, both of you, Clinton and Stephen? At an early age, did you just realize that the music was in you and you needed to play something? I'm interested in how that was discovered. Like, it fascinates me how someone discovers that they could write a song, for example. How did you figure out that this is something you wanted to do, that you just knew?
Well, it all started off when I was still, I think I was 5 or 6 years old, sitting in the street, because I always used to see Yuma Sikelo when SABC One News was called Bob TV back then. And I used to see him play on TV, so I decided to take a 2-liter bottle and cut it in half and put three pencils, cut three holes and put three pencils in it, then start playing on it and making sounds. Then one day a lady drove past. Then she saw me, and then she saw that this guy has interest in music. Then she took me up, spoke with my parents. Then she started taking me for music lessons, which
she just drove past and saw this.
Yeah.
Who's this woman?
Mahi Fletcher.
Well, that's quite a story. This woman changed your life.
Yeah, she did.
On a 2-liter Coke bottle forever, right? Wow. Now, that's quite something. And you, Stephen?
Mine's much more simpler. I went to St. John's, so the music department there is quite good in developing kids at a young stage. And my older brother and sister both started music. I don't know why they did. So they both played music, and I thought when I get to the age of like 9 or 10, I was quite late, I thought, well, I also want to try maybe.
But I don't think that that's necessarily easier. It's just great that you had the opportunity to find this stuff. But they always say that part of the classical education of any gentleman is that he should be able to play an instrument, right?
Yeah.
Agreed.
How many do you play, Eddie?
Oh, jeepers. I play a lot. On a professional level, French horn, trumpet, piano, drums, percussion. And on a less professional level, I've played the clarinet. I played for 4 years in primary school. I've played saxophone. I play the cello. I'm a terrible cellist, but I can get my way around it. So, yeah, a fair amount. I can't play the violin. My son plays the violin. I just avoid that like the plague. It's a silly instrument.
You don't like it?
No, I do like it. I love it. It's just exceptionally difficult. And the violin is one of those that you have to learn at a young age. It's very difficult to pick it up as an adult.
Do you guys find it easier to play, all three of you, to play the music when there's a singer or when there isn't? Or does it make any difference because it's just part of the score or it's not?
For me, as a conductor, it makes it more difficult when a singer comes into the mix. Because then it adds a dynamic, a singer or a choir, because then you're keeping, you know, two elements together.
And it sort of weighs it down in a way, because suddenly that sound drowns out a lot of other sounds.
Yeah, and that's when interpretation, you know, because singers tend to interpret a lot, and then me as a conductor and them as an orchestra have to go with that interpretation, which makes it interesting and exciting. But it does add it adds a little element of surprise, the potential for surprise when you add a singer or a choir or anything.
I think it's cool. I mean, I don't mind whether there's a singer or not. I've heard beautiful pieces that don't ever require a voice in them. Yeah. But there are equally those moments where you think a voice can take it up a level.
Absolutely. You know? No, for sure. I mean, there's a time and a place. Again, back to this show, you'll see it's a great variation of instrumental pieces and vocal pieces.
Timothy Molloy and Samantha Pio are awesome, right?
Oh, they're phenomenal. We've worked with them many times, and they're just superstars, both of them.
It must be horrible when you get a singer who isn't so fantastic. You know,
it is tough.
And maybe someone who hasn't worked with an orchestra before.
Well, the kids, with the Born to Perform kids, it was the first time they worked with us last night, and it just, I wish you could have seen it. It was just something special.
Well, we can see it on the night of A Night with the Stars.
Right.
By the way, just in case you're taking notes on this, it's Friday the 27th of May and Saturday the 28th of May. They're in the evening on the Friday, and on the Saturday it's in the afternoon and in the evening. So you can find out all you need to know. It's all on CompuTicket as well. That's the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra. All right, guys, let's grab these instruments. Let's play. Let's have some fun. Get the trumpet and get the clarinet and get set up and let's play around. In the meantime, Eddie, while they're doing that, I wonder how many people in South Africa know enough about an orchestra? I mean, how many pieces are in this one?
At this stage, I think it's about 17, Act 1 and Act 2, all in all. You mean in the orchestra or in the concert?
No, in this orchestra.
In the current orchestra, we have 60 members.
60,
yeah. It varies.
Some people are in and out.
In and out, so it's always tough, yeah. But roughly 60, yeah.
And where can you rehearse? I mean, is it difficult to find places to rehearse?
We are very, very blessed. We've been shacking up at Wits for a couple of years, and beginning of this year, end of last year, uh-huh. we were finally given our own venue. We've got a beautiful bandroom orchestra place at UJ, University of Joburg. Hmm. It's been revamped. It's state of the art. It is exquisite. It's the first time in 30 years that this organization has actually had a home.
Wow.
So we're very excited about it. So we've got a fantastic...
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very, very chuffed about it. Yeah.
Funding?
Never-ending
battle.
Never-ending battle. Yeah, we were talking about it last night. You know, we're the Joburg Youth Orchestra. We'd love Joburg, you know, City of Joburg to come on board and give something. But it's always the uphill battle. And it's the same throughout the world.
The arts are kind of a luxury, yeah, and absolutely. People spend on them when they've spent on everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let's get these guys in here. Come on, Clinton, come and show off a little bit. What's your favorite piece to play, man? What's the best trumpet solo that you love to play around with? If no one's listening and you're at home practicing, what do you like to play?
Right now I'll be playing an arrangement of Abdul Ibrahim, which Brayu Masekela now plays,
uh-huh.
which is called The Wedding.
Okay, let's hear it.
I haven't tuned, so...
No, listen, we'll be forgiving. Fantastic. All right, I love it. That sound is just awesome, right? There's nothing that sounds like a trumpet. I mean, there's nothing that sounds like any instrument except that instrument.
Well, what's nice with Clint is he crosses over. There was a nice jazzy feel. And we come to the straight stuff. He plays the straight stuff, the classics. Mm. So it's wonderful.
Got a good feel for it. Yeah, all right, let's show off with the clarinet now. Stephen, what's your favorite little clarinet piece to play? Out of all of them. Not the one that you're going to play now, but your favorite one.
Man, my favorite genre for clarinet really is a klezmer vibe, so like a Eastern European kind of thing, because those pieces come in like separate kind of movements.
Uh-huh.
So it starts off with this.
Remember, baby steps with me here. Yeah. I'm an idiot when you come to this stuff. I'm not on your level. All right.
So what I'm going to do now is it's my favorite part of that genre is the beginning of these pieces, which is always like a slow kind of. I don't know really how to explain. It's just like slow and very Eastern.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's go. Show off. Come on. This is where you get to let everybody know how good you are at this. You guys are the advertising for this evening. No pressure. Yeah. All right. Here's the clarinet. Stephen Maycock. Impressive. All right. If you need to know more, you can go to CompuTicket. You can find out everything you need to know. It's called A Night with the Stars, the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra. The conductor, Eddie Clayton, is here, and produced and directed by Brian Schimmel.
Yeah, we're very excited to have Brian with us. It's a huge honor for us. He's on our board of directors.
He's mad, but he's also very, very talented.
Probably the best guy in the country. Just a phenomenal musician, and we've had such an amazing time working with Brian. I've known Brian for many years, but it's the first time I've been working directly with him on the show. And so we're very chuffed to have him on board with us, yeah.
Well, Clinton Mekwe and Stephen Maycock, thank you two very much for bringing your instruments in and for playing a little bit for us. We'll have to come and hear more at the concert. And thank you, Eddie. Thank you for doing this. I hope you get lots and lots of support and that people continue to pitch up for these events.
Thank you, Gary.
To support. I know that once you're there, it's the loveliest experience in the world.
Phenomenal.
For a lot of people, it's just making up your mind to do it and actually going. You will never regret it once you're there.
Absolutely.
It's the best thing ever.
OK, Gareth. Yeah, and thank you from our side always for being such a support.
Sure.
We appreciate it immensely, so thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much. There we go. It's called A Night with the Stars, the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra. It's happening on the 27th and 28th of May. So at the end of this month, last weekend, you can't miss it. Go along and get your tickets at CompuTicket today.
CliffCentral.com.
And if you'd like to catch up on that or any other interview that Gareth has been doing while he's away in America, you can always download any of the podcasts, really, for any show on our channel, CliffCentral.com. Listen, a funny thing happened. Ben locked out his maid. And he doesn't know how he did that because he says that he usually makes a concerted effort not to do that. But he's had to rush back home to unlock the door so that the maid can get in, which I think is always funny. Yesterday, I got here at 6 o'clock in the morning and discovered that I'd left my cell phone at home. And these days, I don't get home until after 6 p.m. in the evening. So I went a full day without my phone yesterday. And you know what? I was okay. The world didn't end.
How did you survive?
Yeah. Well, I was working. So that was the distraction.
But how are you breathing?
No, well, I mean, it's funny, Flex, because I also, like you, thought that I need my cell phone to breathe. But apparently your lungs take care of that whole process on their own. That you're just fine.
See, the FOMO kills me. That's the thing.
But I realized how much more productive I was yesterday throughout the whole day because I didn't have my phone next to me.
But be honest, how long did it take you?
No,
to be fine with it.
No, well, when I got here in the morning, I went through my handbag and I discovered my phone is not here. And then I went into a complete panic and I like broke a sweat. And then the show started. And then from there I left and I went on to do my other work. And it was only at around 5 p.m. in the afternoon that I realized I haven't been on my phone the whole day. And then I remembered, oh, it's because I forgot it at home. And I thought, I've only thought about it once the entire day.
Did you never like want to check Twitter or check Facebook or something?
No, I was checking Twitter on the laptop. But, you know, WhatsApp messages and that kind of thing weren't distracting me.
And did you not get anxiety about the fact that you're going to go home and have to reply to so many messages?
Well, look, there were about 46 messages in my WhatsApp.
Only normal.
46 different chats and conversations. But it was fine. I mean, I responded to those in the evening. But
you're also the same person who drives with their phone in the boot. Like, I know it's a, you know, keep your handbag in the boot, it's a safety thing, but a lot of people play it safe, they put their bags in the boot, but they'll still put their phone up front, even if they won't answer while driving. It's just that thing of, you never know, and it's like, I need to be close to my phone.
Well, if you take a wrong turn and you suddenly need to quickly whip out the GPS or something like that.
Yeah, look.
Obama could decide to call you for lunch. Like, you never know.
Sure. No, no. If I'm relying on my GPS, if I know for a fact that I need my GPS to get to a destination, then my phone is with me because, you know, then I use Waze. Yeah. Then it's always with me in the car. But if I don't need my GPS and I just leave it in the handbag, which ends up in the boot of the car. But Damon did make a good point to me once. He said, well, what would happen if you got into a horrible accident and you needed your cell phone to phone someone and say, I'm stuck in my car, I can't get out, and I'm stuck here.
Tricky. That's so, what I often think about
as well.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And what happens if, like, you get hijacked and they put you in the boot? Like, I like to drive with my cell phone in my pants. Like, in my pocket pants.
Yeah.
So in case they put me in the boot,
I'm so glad you said your pocket pants and not, you know, other parts of your pants.
So if they put me in the boot, I still have my phone.
Yeah. Okay, so listen, guys. I don't know if you're aware, but this coming weekend is the absolute last weekend of May, and then we're heading into June, and then we're in the thick of this winter thing, right? Like, then we're not messing around. Then it's like a big boys game.
It's already starting to get colder at night and in the morning. Last night, I actually went to my mom's house. I don't want to use the word stole because I didn't ask her, but I took. I took the heater.
Mm.
I took two blankets. I took three water bottles.
As in, like, the heater, as in she's only got one?
Yeah.
Okay. That's,
But, oh my God, there's this new invention she had, though. I couldn't take it, though, because she would have noticed. She's got a blanket that heats up. It's not an electric blanket. It's a blanket you heat up, and then you detach, and you can walk around the house with it, and it's warm.
Where do you heat it up? How do you heat it up?
You plug it into a plug. It comes with a special plug. You leave it for like 30 minutes.
Okay.
It heats up the blanket, the actual blanket, and then you detach it, and then you
use it
for like 2 hours.
So it's a detachable electric blanket.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wonder what kind of material it's made out of, because obviously whatever it is can't be cotton, because cotton doesn't retain or insulate heat.
It was so soft and fluffy.
That's very interesting.
And there's nothing else. There's no like microbeads that take warmed up.
Nothing. No, that's legit a blanket.
Okay, Ben, you're back. Everything cool?
Yeah, we actually mentioned that you know, your little maid situation.
What
happened?
The whole time.
No.
Domestic situation.
Oh, guys. You know,
what happened?
It's
you
not,
idiot.
Even, not even worth. I made a boo boo. I gave my maid a key, and then this morning, because I'm just obviously like, I'm at trance when I leave my house, I closed the security gate on top of that. So what I had to do was, I had to leave the security gate open, and I didn't. Yeah, look, this is the drama that we live with in life, huh?
Yeah.
So anyway, but I got there, and that shit was cool. My helper's like, she's fine.
Had she not been waiting that long?
Meowsers was literally there chilling with her, and they were talking.
Oh, like, okay, well, at least.
Talking.
No, because like why do you think she's called Meowsers? She doesn't stop meowing. And the two of them were just having a fat chat, and I get there, it's like, hey guys, and she's like, well... It's so funny, like absolutely hilarious.
Meowsers sounds like Gary, like SpongeBob's pet snail.
Pretty close. There's so much personality there, it's frightening.
So listen, we were listening to Gareth chatting to the Joburg Youth Orchestra earlier. I don't know if you guys have heard of this show called Little Big Shots. It's executive produced by Steve Harvey and Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh,
but
yes.
Steve Harvey also hosts. He presents the show.
Brilliant.
It's kind of like a throwback to... Do you remember when Bill Cosby did that show with little kids? It's like a talent show
what
for kids.
What is it called? The Kids Are All... No. The Kids
Children
Are All
Right. Say the Darndest Things?
Kids or something like that. But anyway, have a listen to this, because this is a four-year-old boy, all right? Now we're talking about, you know... talent here. So have a listen to this. This all went down on Little Big Shots, which is presented by Steve Harvey.
You know what, Evan? I think I and everybody in here wants to hear you play. Come on and go with me. Bring on the piano. All right, Evan, you ready? Let's go. I was going to play the big piano.
That's not Steve Harvey playing.
That was going to be a little Luther Vandross, but don't worry about that. You know that song, the Bumblebee song? Can you play that?
Four years old.
No, you can stay there. I'll come over there. You the man. No, I'm coming over here because we're related. So, Evan, you've only been playing a few months?
Yeah.
That's it. I want to take this moment out to... I want to apologize to my 7 children. Obviously, somewhere down the line, I failed you miserably. I'm sorry, kids. This could have been you. But it ain't. Turn yourself into something. Before I die, please, pick up one skill and do it really well. You know what? I love you, kid. I don't know how you discovered this talent. What? Do it! Kick it!
Now, I don't know what you were doing at 4 years old, but when I was four, I was fat, I was useless, and I certainly was not mastering the piano. How is that, hey? 4 years old.
Wow.
20 years from now, that kid is going to be selling out concert venues, I'm sure. Flex?
I wish there was like something you could just feed your child to make them become prodigies.
Okay, guys. We've come to the end of another show. Sorry, Sia. One final word from you.
On that note, that's meant to be inspiring, but actually makes you have low self-esteem.
Well, I mean, it just kind of highlights people's capabilities, and then you have to reflect on what you have done with your life. Sorry. We're gonna leave it at that for now. You know, it's a Thursday morning, which means tomorrow is the weekend.
Yay! Wow, do we deserve this weekend?
Oh my gosh, which Jesus. Is always so great. Hey, and coming up next is the open book with Loyiso Bala. We are very excited to see Loyiso this morning. He has been nominated. See, just remind me again what that it's the trumpet. Award for gospel music, and I know I probably just butchered that.
Best gospel online, eh?
Best gospel online.
Nominated for.
Fantastic.
Ooh, online platform, Nochal.
Congratulations, Loyiso. We're very proud of you.
Yay.
And if you'd like to go on and vote for Loyiso, you can just click on to cliffcentral.com, find the open book on our podcast, and you'll follow the instructions there on how to vote.
The Trumpet Africa Gospel Music Awards.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, my man. It's Loyiso. 9 to 10 Thursdays. Listen, but now is the link, because some people have been complaining that the link has not been working.
We need to check with tech support on that, so we'll check right on it, and then we'll sort it out.
Good.
Is it working? It's working.
Yeah, it's working, especially if you go on the computer here. Cool.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, guys. We'll be back with you again tomorrow morning. Now, here's an interesting song because, you know, Rihanna's has been doing the rounds, and, you know, a lot of people love it and it's catchy, and then there are all these parodies that have been made on the song as well. But I heard the song without knowing that it was a Rihanna song a couple of nights ago, and I am impressed by the song, and I'm loving it, and it is from her new album, Anti. So we'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 on cliffcentral.com.